played a polonaise and nocturne, an impromptu, a prelude, three mazurkas and a ballade in her all Chopin recital. Yanina Fialkowska really couldn't end with anything other than a waltz. Chopin's minute waltz bringing to a close her recital here at Wigmore Hall. Do catch up online with her appearance on midweek over on Radio 4. And look out for her new disc of Grieg lyric pieces, which is coming out soon. She'll be back at Wigmore Hall next summer and in the spring performing with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. As the applause continues here, I'll hand you on to Broadcasting House.
Sarah Moore-Peach introduced that lunchtime concert, and tomorrow's offering from Wigmore Hall is an all-Vivaldi programme given by the countertenor Philippe Jarouski and ensemble Arta Cerce. And it begins here on BBC Radio 3 at the usual time, just after the 1 o'clock news. 2 o'clock this Sunday afternoon, and time now for the early music show, and as part of Radio 3's Decameron Nights season, Lucy Skeeping explores the musical scene in 14th century Italy in Music to Boccaccio's Ears.
Welcome to the show. Today's programme is part of Radio 3's Decameron Nights season, which celebrates various aspects of this, the most famous work of the 14th century Italian poet Giovanni Boccaccio. Full of spirit and humour, the Decameron contains 100 tales, as told over 10 days, by a fictional party of young men and women who are sheltering from the plague in a secluded villa just outside Florence. Over the next hour, we're going to be exploring any references to music in the text, and we're going to hear some of the very few musical settings of Boccaccio's poems that still survive. And in fact, we've just heard one of them to open the programme. We're also going to hear pieces from the period that Boccaccio may have been familiar with. And to help us, I'm delighted to be joined by the medieval music specialist, David Fallows. Welcome, David, and thanks for joining me.
Pleasure to be here.
I was actually quite surprised to read that there really are quite a lot of references to music sprinkled all over the Decameron.
Well, these are stories of gentle people, educated people, and educated music is part of what they did. And that's why at the end of each day, they've been telling stories. They've told 10 stories in the course of the day. And at the end of the day, they sing and they dance and they listen to a song. And at the end of each day, the full text of the song is printed in the Decameron. Sadly, we don't have music for any of the Decameron texts, but we do have music for other poems by Boccaccio.
I guess the 14th century is still quite an early period as far as musical development is concerned. So what kind of music are we talking about? I mean, is it all monophonic in style?
Absolutely not. No, that piece that you just heard happens to be monophonic by Lorenzo Mazzini, who set another piece by Boccaccio in polyphony. But no, there's an enormous repertory from the 14th century. I mean, the Squarcialupi Codex alone contains 350 pieces, most of which are polyphonic. One or two of them are monophonic like that.
Well, we've just heard, as you said, a setting of Boccaccio's poem Non so qual I mi voglia, performed by Palatino 87, music by the Florence-based composer Lorenzo Marzini. And we're going to hear another of his settings in a moment. But, David, would Boccaccio have known Marzini's music? After all, they were almost exact contemporaries, weren't they?
Yes. I mean, Boccaccio spent an awful lot of his life in Florence. There was an enormous musical life in Florence. As you say, they're more or less contemporaries. We've got two settings of Boccaccio by Marzini, seems to me to mean something. And yes, he was a very educated man. That's what you hear also in the various references to music in the course of the Decameron.
So we're going to hear a piece called Aposte Messe, set by Marzini. It sounds like the word messe, is it anything to do with a mass, or is it a love song, purely secular?
It's neither. It's a caccia. It's about hunting. And the whole first part of the song tells about the dogs assembling to go hunting. And then the second part of the song is just boo, 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 boo. The dogs are making silly hunting sounds.
Poste Messe, a song of hunting by Lorenzo Marzini from the 1300s, the period, in fact, of the Decameron. David, we do know something about Mazzini's life and career. And of course, we're listening during this programme to a couple of settings of Boccaccio's words that he made. But what about other composers from the 14th century in Italy? I mean, how many of them do we know by name?
Ooh, two or three dozen. Really quite a lot. Most of them we know from ascriptions in the manuscripts, and then there's like one or two documents. That's the case with Lorenzo Mazzini. We know that he was a canon of the Church of San Lorenzo in Florence, and we know very little else about Lorenzo Mazzini. We don't even know very much about the most prolific of all those composers, which is Landini, who was also a canon of the Church of San Lorenzo. But, you know, we got 150 pieces by Landini alone. This is a major composer, and some of them are marvellous.
And we're going to hear one of them now. Can you introduce it for us?
Yes, Gran Pian Tagliocchi. It's one of my favourite Landini pieces. It's absolutely glorious, long, really sad love song, and the same melody keeps coming back. It's a love song. Man doesn't know whether to die or to continue to suffer, which is one of those themes that comes very, very often in the music of the 14th century and of the 15th, of course.
Thank you.
Gran Piant agli Occhi by Francesco Landini, performed by the American musicians Anonymous Four. David, Landini was enormously revered in his lifetime, wasn't he? And yet he was blind, wasn't he?
Yes, blind from birth, like so many of the greatest organists in the history of organ playing. How he composes music, I've no idea. But it looks very much, there's a theory that he was taught composition by Lorenzo Mazzini, whose two pieces we've heard. And certainly the whole counterpoint thing, really getting complicated lines moving together, is one of the things that Landini is marvellous. I mean, one of the great geniuses. And I thought it would be fun to hear just two pieces where that happens. I hope the pieces are lovely to listen to anyway, whether you are interested in counterpoint and the way things go. They're both pieces in the genre of caccia, which we heard from Lorenzo Mazzini, these hunting pieces. The first of them, Così Pensoso, he's just walking along by the riverbank and he hears some girls who are hunting for fish. And one of them says, oh, I've got a big one here. But once again, it's immaculately assembled. And then the next piece I thought would be nice to hear is De Dimmi Tu, which it's in the style of a caccia, but it's a really evil song, addressing this lady and saying, who do you think you are? Why do you keep looking at yourself in the mirror? Why do you dress yourself so grandly? And why are you so pompous? Here, actually, the canonic voices are underneath and at the fifth. And then in the second part, you get the three canonic voices at three different pitches. You don't really need to hear or understand that, but it really is an astonishing piece of compositional assembly in both these pieces.
And we're going to hear them sung now, unaccompanied or a cappella, and more about that later, by the group Gothic Voices.
Thank you.
was Gothic Voices, two songs from Trecento, Italy by Francesco Landini, part of the Early Music Show's contribution to Radio 3's Decameron Nights season. And they were introduced by my studio guest, David Fallows. David, those unaccompanied voices certainly make a gorgeous sound, but I gather there's some question about whether this sort of music should in fact have instruments as well.
Well, yes, this is a very difficult question and nobody can really answer it. That's why the recordings that I've selected for this programme, the first one was a German group, Palatino 87, and then for Mazzini's A Poste Messe, we had an Italian group, which is actually called La Reverdi, but anyway, the real point is the extraordinary virtuoso singing of Elisabetta de Mirkovic, doing those kinds of lines that come really quite a lot, actually, in the music of the Italian Trecento. It's very easy to see the Trecento as part of a continuing Italian tradition coming right through to the 19th and 20th century of really loving what a voice can do when it's really under pressure and singing impossibly fast. And then, indeed, we had the American group Anonymous Four, totally angelic and serene. And then for those last two pieces, indeed, it's Gothic Voices with Catherine King and Stephen Harold, Julian Podger and Lee Nixon.
Of course, with this very early repertoire, the manuscripts or the scores don't specify, you know, how they should be performed. So do you think any particular group or even a nationality is nearer what they would have sounded like at the time they were written? Because we've just heard Gothic Voices who have this very English a cappella sound. I mean, how near do we think they are to authenticity, if I may use that word?
Well, as you say, the manuscripts absolutely don't specify anything until you get into the 16th century, and even then not very much. The music of the Trecento, most of it comes in one or other manuscript with all three voices texted. So there's a case for singing it with just three voices. On the other hand, you see pictures of instruments all over the manuscript as well. So doubling with instruments is certainly in order, and playing this music just on instruments is certainly in order. But honestly said, it's been a very, very difficult topic to research. And one of the reasons that it's difficult to research is that there are so many vested interests. It's not purely abstract research, and tempers have been lost, and it's been a very difficult thing to get close to. But there are certainly, as I see it at the moment, lots and lots of different ways to do this thing, which is why I've selected groups from different places. And the next group is a group from France, a group actually called Decameron.
And there are no words in this one, at least. It's a dance, isn't it?
It's a dance, yes, actually. It's a very small repertory of untexted pieces. They're all in a manuscript in the British Library, in fact, in London. I think this group is marvellous. They sing and dance and they bounce around. And it begins with Christophe Deligne, who, to my mind, is the world's best organetto player. He can do things on an organetto that you just wouldn't have believed were possible until you'd heard him play.
Organetto?
Organetto, handheld organ that you pump it with the left hand and you play the keys with the right hand.
And just before we hear it, it's always nice to sort of let your imagination go when you listen to music. Do we know anything about the sort of steps? Was it a circle dance? Were they ladies and gentlemen in couples? Do we know anything about that?
No, we got no written choreography for anything before the middle of the 15th century. We got a few pictures of people, but they're all looking a bit polite. So I think it's fair to say that we don't know. Saltarello, the piece is called, which implies some kind of jumping.
Thank you. two pieces from 14th century Italy. The song Fenice Fu, performed by Olivier Marco, and before that a lively Saltarello dance. And I really wish we could go back in time and see if those dance steps really were like they look in the movies. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Lucy Skeeping, and I'm chatting with the musicologist David Fallows about the music associated with that amazing collection of stories from the 14th century written by Giovanni Boccaccio, known as the Decameron, part of our Decameron Nights season here on Radio 3. David, the song we've just heard, Fenice Fu, was obviously telling us something important, although I must say I didn't understand it, but the words did seem very clear. It was almost in a sort of ballad form. Tell me what it was about.
I have no idea. That is to say, you look at a literal translation. Once upon a time, I was a phoenix and I behaved like a phoenix. And then I became a turtle dove. And then all women should behave properly.
Well, I understand that.
Do you? Well, I have to say I don't. But it's just to say that there are actually quite a lot of poems in the Trecento repertory that are more or less incomprehensible. As far as I'm concerned, some of them have been studied, but some of them have been much less studied. But I mean, it's one of these funny things about literary historians. They'll write a whole book about three lines of Dante, but a little song text is less interesting to them. And a lot of those texts are very complicated. They've got complicated philosophical notions built into these texts. The composers, most of them were moving in the same circles, the same courtly circles as the philosophers and the theologians, and some of them were philosophers and theologians, and they were also, I think, moving in the same circles as the poets.
Well, the music of the song Fenice Fu was by a composer called Jacopo da Bologna, and we're going to hear some more of his music in this next set. David, what do we know about him? Because I think he wrote his own lyrics quite often, didn't he?
What we know about Jacopo da Bologna is very little. Some of it is extracted from the contents of his texts, and he seems to be in the courts of the Este family and in the Visconti family in Milan. And I think there's just one document somewhere in Florence about Jacopo. But like so many of these people, the solid documentary information is tiny compared with the enormous quantity of music that survives. As concerns the text, in most cases, we don't know who wrote the text, and we more or less assume that it's the composer who wrote the text. Just occasionally, you do know who wrote the text. And this next piece, Non a suo amante, is the only setting in the 14th century that we have of the greatest of the lyric poets of the 14th century, the greatest of the lyric poets of all time, you could say, Petrarch. And the text says this: the pleasure that Diana gave to her lover when he saw her bathing naked is nothing to my excitement when my beloved washed her headscarf and let me see her lovely hair.
Oh,
Non al suo amante, an erotic song by Petrarch, set by Jacopo da Bologna. And the performers were Palatino 87. David, there is so little information, as you were saying, given on the scores of this early period about how the music should be performed, what instruments or just voices and so on. But do you feel that certain ensembles really do get closer than others to how they were originally envisaged by the composer?
Well, that's a tricky question, but one of the things, of course, is the real thrill of hearing Italians sing Italian music. I'm absolutely not going to say that non-Italians shouldn't sing it, but the first time I heard Italians sing Trecento music, it was in Certaldo, which the town where Boccaccio may have been born. He certainly died there, and he loved it. It's a little mountain town like 30 miles outside of Florence. It was an event just like what happens in the Decameron, actually. I discovered teaching a course about 15th century notation or something, and I got talking to the students, and I realised that they were active performers of Trecento music. And I said, wouldn't it be marvellous, after I've done my seminar tomorrow, if you could sing something? And it was only once they stood up and started singing that I realised here I was in this 13th century undercroft, just opposite Boccaccio's house, precisely replicating the occasions described in the Decameron at the end of a day's story, you have some music. And I looked across the valley to the next hill, which was San Gimignano, and the sunset was reflecting off the windows of San Gimignano. And it just felt so real that I just wanted to share with you what I heard then.
Vezzene Benedetta, Blessed Virgin, Mother of the Saviour, praise be to you above all others. And that was performed by Alessandra Fiori and Gloria Moretti, members of Acantus. David, that's the first song, actually, we've heard so far, which is sacred rather than secular. How much devotional or religious music, in fact, survives from the Trecento?
Well, that's one of the exciting things, actually, about the research that's been going on in the last 30 years about Trecento music. I mean, all the secular music has been known for over a century, and it's in these marvellous big manuscripts. slowly as they uncover little fragments from here and there, little cathedral archives, something that was just used to stuff a binding. Very often the secular pieces in those fragments are pieces we already know, and the sacred pieces are pieces we don't know. And the size of the sacred repertory is growing, growing, growing almost every day as the researchers keep digging this stuff out. So there's quite a lot of it. It's mostly quite a lot simpler than the secular music. This sort of big showy stuff that you very often get in the secular songs of the Trecento is less obviously present in the sacred music. But there's an awful lot of it, and it's very marvellous stuff, which is why it seemed to me important to share that as part of our survey of what's going on in Boccaccio's time.
It really was a beautiful piece, actually. Well, our next piece is considerably longer than anything we've heard so far. The text is by our man Boccaccio again, isn't it?
Yes, indeed, but not from the Decameron. I'm a little bit cautious about presenting this because it may seem a little bit strange to some ears, and as you say, it does go on for 9 minutes. But this is the only recent recording of Lorenzo's big Boccaccio piece, and one of the reasons it goes on for 9 minutes is that some of the writing is incredibly detailed and not easily done by a mere human voice. And it's also a fairly long poem. It's about Narcissus staring into the fountain and falling in love with himself, and, you know, he eventually drowns himself in the fountain. And then the poet sees his love also staring at her face in the river and looks at the dangers.
Thank you.
the group Micrologus telling us about Narcissus and the dangers of love, etc. in Come il Sum Fonte, a setting by Lorenzo Mazzini of poetry by Boccaccio. Well, I'm afraid we've almost run out of time. So my thanks to David Fallows for being a brilliant guest. And since most of the musical references in the Decameron are about dancing, we're going to end with one. This is what I imagine must have been a warlike dance. It's called Estampita Bellica, performed here by Christophe Deligne and his group appropriately named Decameron.
Stampita Bellica, an anonymous dance from 14th century Italy, performed there by Ensemble de Cameron, directed by Christophe Deligne. It was the last piece in Music to Boccaccio's Ears, this week's early music show, which was introduced by Lucy Skeeping. Radio 3's Decameron Nights season continues every evening this week with five more dramatised stories from Giovanni Boccaccio's great collection at 10:45 in the evenings. And if you missed last week's five stories, you can catch up with them in an omnibus edition in tonight's Drama on 3 at 10:00 here on BBC Radio 3. As for the present, we're about to fully enter the choral zone, choral evensong, in just a moment, followed on at 4:00. By the choir with Sarah Moore Peaches with me now. So, Sarah, how far have we got with Choir of the Year?
Well, we've been featuring the category finals every week for the last 4 weeks. And the last category, the adult category, I'll be playing you performances from today. And then I'll be talking to Gareth Malone, who's hosting the grand final in Manchester in Bridgewater Hall, which starts at 5:00. So we'll be missing, unfortunately, the competition final and a chance to tell you who won. But you will be able to catch that next week on the programme. But today, the adult category final. Final performances. And as well of that, I've got the Choral Classic of the Week, which is Aaron Copland's In the Beginning, which is a spine-tingling a cappella setting of verses from Genesis about the creation of the world. It's wonderful, Jonathan. Okay. 5:00. Tune in and listen.
Thank you, Sarah. That's Sarah Moore-Peach with the choir at 5:00. I beg your pardon, 4:00. BBC Radio 3, it's now 3:00 and time for an edited repeat of Choral Evensong, which was first broadcast live last Wednesday from Westminster Abbey. The canticles are Herbert Howell's setting in G, written in 1918, and the anthem is A Song of the New Jerusalem by Matthew Martin, first performed by the choir of Gloucester Cathedral in 2011, and dedicated to the late Dr. John Sanders, who was organist there from 1967 for over a quarter of a century. The service opens now with an introit by William Byrd, Vigilate, Watch ye therefore, for ye know not when the master of the house cometh. And first here, Bach's chorale prelude on Wachet auf.